boy.
Canada.
Canada.
Well, doesn't it derive from Ogunyekehe word?
Yeah. It's village.
As Indigenous people, we are used to our stories getting a little twisted. So listen up as we set the record straight. I'm Ganyetio. Please join me as we hear from dozens of Indigenous people. Together, we will decolonize our words and our minds on the Telling Our Twisted Histories podcast. You can find episodes on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Chase!
Mine!
Nice
mine.
Bowling!
Bibbs, yeah!
Cadence!
Mine!
Mine again!
Oh!
Mine! Oh, my God!
Vivs, Cadence, Jack. These are some of the grade 6 students at West Point Grey Academy in Vancouver.
That's a good rally. Like that.
Volleyball is today's chosen activity for class, but not gym class. Their teacher, Brittany Townrow, uses activities like this to check in.
We usually like to spend the last few minutes of our class doing something outside. And so it's kind of a student-directed activity, whether that's like tag, or this one we brought out a volleyball and we played volleyball together. Recess is great, but having more of a time where we're together and playing helps build community.
Brittany uses physical activity to connect with her students and to check in and connect with each other. Getting them out of their books and outdoors is part of her holistic approach to teaching. Brittany sees this approach as a way to bring Indigenous ways of learning into the classroom. She wants kids to see and be themselves. It means this simple game of volleyball can have a big impact on the kids.
I see them just light up. And I'm aware that not every student is going to want to play tag or that game, but in that volleyball game, we are all together and we are all passing the ball and working together, and there's no one sitting off alone. Providing that space for what the kids need, it's only a few minutes, but I just see them come back with such smiles, and I've noticed that it's such a great way to have the kids not let off steam, but just have that area where they can be authentically them, connecting with each other.
By giving kids time outside to be together, Brittany is teaching beyond the provincial curriculum. She's helping her students build community. And whether it's playing sports, or learning how to weave a cedar basket, or telling traditional stories, teachers like Brittany are bringing Indigenous ways of being into education. Tansay, Anine, Buju, hello, and welcome. This is Unreserved. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Learning can take place in many different ways. Indigenous people taught their children by storytelling, passing down their knowledge through generations. Hands-on learning took place on the land, fishing, hunting, or growing and harvesting food and medicines. The introduction of structured classrooms changed communities. Then the residential school system left a stain on formal education for many Indigenous people. But a growing community of Indigenous educators are changing the way Indigenous children are learning. Anishinaabe educator Harvey McHugh says teaching Indigenous youth about themselves teaches them resilience and self-confidence.
Cultural education will make them more aware of who they are, make them appreciate where their families and where their communities have come from. It will give them knowledge that will ground them.
Colette Sunday says they don't just teach kids about who they are, they teach the entire Silk community.
We're setting the foundation for all to learn and become proud of who they are.
And Shannon Letty and Brittany Townrow created curriculum bundles, tools that help teachers incorporate traditional knowledge into their classrooms.
I'm supporting non-Indigenous teachers teaching Indigenous knowledge.
So protocol and respect were definitely a huge part of the equation, both on the NITEP end in creating the bundles and then in thinking about how we're going to ask non-Indigenous educators to take that work up.
Today, Decolonizing the Classroom by Rooting Education in Culture. Lesson 1. The Land is Beautiful. This is the first of more than 300 lessons that make up this Silk Culture curriculum. This educational tool doesn't have students standing to sing O Canada. Instead, it teaches them Silk culture and traditions. Things like how to fish for lingcod or when to expect a lightning mushroom harvest. Colette Sunday coordinated the collaborative creation of the curriculum with the help of our friend Harvey McHugh. It's an important step for the Upper Nicola Band in BC because it holds teachings not only for children, but for the entire community. Colette, welcome to Unreserved.
Hello, why Hushkahalt?
Very nice to have you today. To start off with, what is a culture curriculum?
Well, for us here at Upper Nicola, ours has been titled the 13 Moon Curriculum. And what it encompasses is teachings about who we are and where we come from.
And where did the idea for this curriculum come from?
Upper Nicola has operated our own school since 1990. And back in the day, some of our teachers there who would teach the Insilchin language and culture were always adamant that we needed our own curriculum. We didn't want to be a cookie cutter approach for provincial schools. And there's a reason why we started our own school.
And so you had the school since 1990, but this particular curriculum was only developed recently, or is this something that's always been there?
I think it's been a work in progress since we've had the school. There was always the idea, and similar to our teachings, a lot of the curriculum was orally passed on. There was nothing formally written. Now we have a nice concise binder that will show K-12 teachings, and it will cover off who we are and where we come from relative to the 13 moons that we follow.
And so now you have this curriculum. Who helped you develop the 13 moons curriculum?
Well, we've always had this goal to develop the curriculum, and the writer of the curriculum was Harvey McHugh. We provided all of the resources to him. We provided him the 13 moon calendar. And so that stemmed from a different project that we had worked on with the National Indian Brotherhood Trust. So it was linking, how are we going to link our residential school survivors with our youth and everyone in between to share their story? How are we going to learn how to get back onto the land? So one thing leads to the next to the next. It's almost like the curriculum was one big piece of the puzzle our solution and going forward. So Harvey helped us write it. But at the same time, we have been putting together this framework with our Kustom Tima, the grandmothers group, who have been actively working to develop our own law to replace the provincial child and family law. So when they were asked by the provincial government, what would you like to see in a cultural plan for a child that belongs to Upper Nicola, one of our relations who may be adopted by an outside family? What would you want them to know? And so they started putting this large list of items together to say, we want them to know where their territory is. We want them to know how to speak their language, how to hand drum, how to survive off the land. Like, how did we sustain ourselves since time immemorial? So they had all of these teachings. And what we had done is we had a summer student come in and organize those under the 13 moons. When would you learn all of these things? And so that was done. And then we had all of these resources. We had a grant from the First Peoples Cultural Council, and we had documented all of the resources we had at the school. So we had the framework. We had all the resources listed. We just didn't have a curriculum writer. Then a conversation happened with Harvey to learn about his other experiences in helping other nations in the country to develop curriculum. And I said, hey, that's what we want to do. And so he shared what he had done with another First Nation. And then I showed him our framework and he said, I can't believe how far along you're developed. I'd love to help you work on this. So we sent him all of the resources. he not only took those resources, but everything that's available on the World Wide Web, and he started putting this curriculum together. It was vetted by a group of educators here in the community. And so they looked at it, provided their comments, and we said this is the first cut of the curriculum. It's not to say it's the end all be all. Definitely it's going to be added on to. If you're to look at it now, some of the knowledge keepers say, hey, you're missing this. This isn't included. I wouldn't put it this way. I would organize it this way.
Mm.
Well, really, we want the community to take ownership of the curriculum. And we just said it's the beginning. It's really not even the beginning. It's just kind of like, this is where we are, the incremental step in terms of where we want to go forward with this curriculum.
Mm, beautiful. You mentioned the provincial curriculum earlier and said it was a bit problematic. What's problematic about using the province's curriculum in your community?
Well, we don't see in earlier years, we wouldn't see teachings about Silk language and culture in the curriculum. It would be mandatory for us to learn colonizers' history. And how does that apply to us as Silk people? How is that going to help us thrive and move forward to help ourselves? So mm-hmm. there was a lot of gaps in there. And a lot of times, First Nations, we learn hands-on. So we like to be out on the land. We like to be participating. And the classroom setting may not be the best for all of us.
Mm. Could you imagine a day, understanding that this is sort of early days and first steps and you're going to develop it further, but could you imagine a day where you don't use the provincial curriculum at all?
Yes, we have a goal in our community to, like I had said, to replace the provincial jurisdiction with our own law for child and family, otherwise known to us as our relations. We could see this curriculum actually being the programs to stand up the law.
Mm.
So if we were to teach our ways to all of our people, we believe that we will be stronger going forward to reach our mission, our vision, our goals, and to really be self-sufficient. So we believe that this curriculum is just the beginning of that. It's not going to only help us in the school. We want to build the future stewards of our environment, our land, our Tumakula. So right now we're wanting to teach those at the youngest age about what is a Tumakula. So that to us is the land and the environment. And how do we live off the land? How are we a part of the land? How are we a part of this environment? And so how are we going to be stewards of that Tumuk and Tumakula?
Mm, that's amazing. Let's take a little deeper dive into the curriculum itself. Tell me more about the kinds of lessons that are in it. For example, we mentioned the lightning mushroom harvest, which sounds very intriguing to me.
Yeah, exactly. Like the harvesting calendar itself talks about foods we would harvest to sustain ourselves. So the curriculum itself touches on, I think it's about 12 to 15 areas. And what would we want to have ourselves understand about who we are and where we come from? So it would talk about certain things about, okay, what is the traditional territory for Upper Nicola? So what are the boundaries? And say a lesson might say, perhaps you're in the classroom and you're going to learn about the traditional territory boundary. Well, maybe there's some traditional names for the mountains, some of the ceremonial sites, the areas where we would traditionally go. And so maybe the next lesson might be about going to harvest. So right now in the springtime, we're wanting to harvest all those beings that live underground. So where are those roots and what do they mean to us? And so it could talk about where you go in harvest, how you take care of the land, so that it's going to be there for future generations to come. And then how do you prepare those foods? And that could be one of them.
Mm.
And then if you think about it, we're also out fishing on the land right now. So the men or the families are going out and they're harvesting the spring trout. And then it could talk about winter, lingcod, spokaleach fishing. It could talk about like, what is our traditional songs? Right now, we're actually looking at our school and the daycare about introducing an Silk'jin dance and song. So we host a powwow here with the five Nicola Valley communities, but essentially we have been utilizing borrowed culture in terms of a powwow. Well, what we're wanting to do as at the beginning stages of rolling this curriculum out is saying, what did our traditional dress look like? What do our songs look like? What, how do you build a hand? How can you construct or put together a hand drum? And then in terms of doing that, okay, how do you prepare a deer hide? That's another lesson in the curriculum. So they can utilize science, they can utilize mathematics, social studies, English, and silk gin. So there's so many components to all of these teachings. So if you were to look at it like, okay, what is the Okanagan song? So we have our own anthem as the Okanagan Nation. Let's teach that. Let's learn that. How do we do that? So there's so many components, and some parts may be repeated throughout the curriculum. So you might be at introduction at a younger age. Then a couple of years later, you'll see that lesson coming up with a little bit more explanation. And then a little bit further on, there'll be even further explanation and meaning to it. So there's like other lessons in there about like our chapchut, which are oral stories. And those are the stories that assist us to identify what our laws are. How do we live to be good people? How do we live to be the stewards? And how were those passed down to us from time immemorial?
This makes my heart so happy. Why is it important, do you think? This might be an obvious question. Why is it important to immerse children in their culture and teachings rather than this is Canada, this is the geography, this is our political systems, etc., and this is our history? Why instead immerse them in their own culture?
We want to instill pride in our children. We want to instill pride in all of us. There isn't a family that's not affected by the residential school and intergenerational trauma. And not everybody had the opportunity to learn their language, learn about who they are, learn about their cultural practices. So we believe that we will have a safer community. We'll have a more a community that's working in unity. We will see so many more positive aspects in our community if we teach our language and culture and our traditional ways of living.
Right. How do you think a strong cultural education can be a stepping stone to self-determination and, you know, empowerment?
Well, we have worked over the last 3 or 4 years in a concentrated effort learning about what our self-inherent rights are, and to us, our silk-inherent rights. And every time we've had a conversation, whether it be in a large group or a small focus group, every time we came to the same resolution, we need to get back onto the land and we need to revitalize our language. If we have 10 or less fluent or semi-fluent speakers, what are we going to do about that? If we don't have more people out on the land, how are they going to know who they are and where they come from? So it's those parts that we believe will help us move forward to realize the positive side of being of being Upper Nicola Spachman. We're setting the foundation for all to learn and become proud of who they are.
How will the lessons that they learn, you know, on the land, in the classroom, be used outside of the school?
It's interesting. Right now, we would see a lot of kids in the past coming to work here for their first summer job here at our band office. And we would go through the interview and say, what do you know about your community? And we might not have a lot of answers. Well, we want to change that around. We want them to know at the youngest age that they are a part of this community. So if we all have strengths, then we can build on those strengths. Who are the people that will be responsible for collecting medicines? Who will be the people to harvest the deer? Who will be the ones to prepare so we can be interdependent people rather than working and promoting independence? Well, how can we be interconnected, interdependent, so we can all help one another? And we are looking to challenge ourselves to bring this curriculum into all program areas, not simply just at the school or a cultural program, but how should this curriculum be a part of the health program? How should this curriculum be a part of our education program, our housing program? Like, how do we break down the barriers, these silos, and make these teachings a part of everything we do?
If you could cast your mind ahead, you know, 10, 20 years down the road, how do you think your community will look having, you know, integrated all of this culture into all of your programs? And as you said, ripping down those silos.
Oh, I think we would have, right now we have a small number of knowledge keepers that have been identified, and that group of knowledge keepers would grow, and we would have less initiatives led by the band office and more initiatives led by the community. Really, the band office may be just here to receive funds and pass them on and help with the reporting for funders and to the community about, okay, this is what we said we're going to do and how did we do it? Really, we need to empower the people to be running all of the programs under the 13 Moon curriculum.
Is there any advice or, you know, direction that you could offer to other First Nation, you know, communities who might want to do something similar? Besides get a hold of Harvey McHugh, apparently.
Well, that's a good question. Really, I think every community needs it. There's never going to be a cookie cutter approach that's going to work for First Nations. I think it's just it's just identifying where you are at in terms of your community development. What are your community priorities? And okay, what is the knowledge that you want to pass on to your people and how do you want to organize that? So definitely there's models out there, I'm sure, that you could learn from, but really it's going to have to come from the community for them to take ownership of the curriculum to say, yeah, this is what we want to have our people, our rights holders learn. So this is it might seem to some of us that have practiced these things, well, why doesn't everybody know this? Well, that's not the case. We really need to help one another out so that we're going to be able to learn the basics and they'll get more advanced. And I think ideally we would want to have more people taking on the lessons and passing them forwards. Especially the band schools, they will know what they want to teach their kids. And they probably have been doing that. It just might not be in an organized fashion. Mm. So bring together all of your resources that you have and then start to identify where the gaps might be and then start to develop those lessons.
I love a good sharing.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you so much, Colette, for your time today and sharing a little bit of your beautiful curriculum with us.
You're welcome. What?
Colette Sunday is the band administrator and member of the Upper Nicolet.
Oh boy.
Canada.
Well, doesn't it derive from Ogunyekehower?
No. It's village. Yeah.
As Indigenous people, we are used to our stories getting a little twisted. So listen up as we set the record straight. I'm Ganyetio. Please join me as we hear from dozens of Indigenous people. Together, we will decolonize our words and our minds on the Telling Our Twisted Histories podcast. You can find episodes on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A band. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, US Public Radio, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Today, Indigenous educators are claiming space for Indigenous ways of learning, whether on the land or in the classroom. From kindergarten all the way through post-secondary learning, Harvey McHugh has been writing Indigenous curriculum since the 1970s. His passion for education has helped communities across the country. 2 years ago, he helped Colette Sunday and the Upper Nicola Band create their own Silk culture curriculum. Harvey believes that culturally based education opens the door to success. There's still a lot of work to be done, but it's work that Harvey has dedicated his life to.
Education is the key. It's so vital to our success as nations and as people. Increasingly, society in which we live is knowledge-based, and with advances in technology, our people, or especially our young people, they need to have the skills, they need to have the intellectual development, the analytical abilities to do well in today's society and for the next 25, 50 years. Formal education is the key, but at the same time, we cannot lose sight of who we are. When our young people are acquiring a formal education, it's essential that a critical element of that formal education is knowledge of themselves as a nation and as a people. And if we don't do that, 100 years from now, we're not going to be around as nations and as people. I remind myself almost daily that every culture, every nation in the world teaches their young people about themselves in their schools. When you go to school, you learn about your history, you learn about your community, You learn about who you are, how you got to this place. And we haven't done that for our young people. And certainly that was not the case in residential school, where education was basically manual training, working in the fields, or young women, you know, learning domestic skills, basic reading and writing and arithmetic. And that was it. It really wasn't much of a change from the missionary schools that existed on our communities before residential schools really expanded. Our formal education needs to focus increasingly on teaching our young people who they are, how our communities came to be, our traditional and cultural history, so that they learn who they are. And that knowledge, I believe, is essential to growth. It's essential to resilience. It's essential to self-esteem. If you don't know who you are, you're going to be bereft of the knowledge that you need to make your way in the world. Cultural education will make them more aware of who they are, make them appreciate where their families and where their communities have come from. It will give them knowledge that will ground them. And that grounding increases their self-esteem, their self-confidence, and their resilience. And none of those factors are produced by the provincial education curricula and education systems. And so are too many of our young people just lack. They lack self-confidence, they lack self-awareness, and their resilience to respond to challenges and difficulties is not really that high. So those missing elements are crucial to the development of our young people. We've accepted far too long the fact that the provincial curricula is going to provide the education foundation for our young people to advance and grow. And that has not been the case. And I believe the principal reason why that hasn't been the case is the absence of and ignoring who we are, how we came to be here, and what our communities are composed of. If you go to any country in the world and you talk to young people, I mean, they studied their history. They studied their culture, you know, their theater, their books, their authors, their playwrights, all sorts of cultural content make up the curriculum that exists in any country in the world. You look at the curriculum that's in our schools, all First Nations schools right across the country use the provincial curriculum. And legally, there is no requirement for a First Nations school to use a provincial curriculum. First Nations schools are federal schools. We're not provincial schools. I've argued with some humor that if a First Nations school wanted to use Japanese curriculum, there's nothing preventing them from doing that because First Nations schools are federal schools. But in the absence of our own curriculum and the belief that education is best done through the provincial curriculum, the provincial curricula appear in all our schools. The challenge to replace gradually the provincial curriculum with our own curriculum is definitely something that people need to look at and figure out how to do it. But there's nothing preventing us other than our own resolve to, over the next 10 to 15 to 20 years, to gradually replace the provincial curriculum with our own culturally sensitive, culturally aware curriculum that I would like to think would be partially land-based curriculum as well as classroom curriculum. You know, that's not to say that 30 years from now, our kids shouldn't be learning what they learn in the provincial curriculum. Our kids will still need to learn writing skills and reading skills and analytical skills and math skills. I mean, those are essentials in terms of intellectual growth and development. But that can be done within an Indigenous context. Some people have argued, and I wouldn't dismiss the argument, that you can have a partial First Nations curriculum side by side with a partial provincial curriculum. And it just needs some people to sit down and figure out, okay, what's the content of the First Nations curriculum and the provincial curriculum that we would combine to create a complete K-12 curriculum. We still have a long way to go in terms of providing our young people with a knowledge base that is going to help them in their lives going forward. I just so firmly believe that we have to look at how we educate our kids. We just can't use the provincial curriculum. I mean, there are some small adaptations being made. I'm not discounting that, but we need to be much more thorough in what we identify as content for our learning for our young people. If you strengthen people's self-awareness, and if you increase their self-confidence, you build their resilience. And if you have resilience, either as a person or as a community, you can deal with challenges much more positively. You can confront difficult situations and not fall down or not stumble or be totally deflated by them. And this is where education, particularly cultural-based education, has an important role to play. The more resilient we become as individuals and as communities, the better off we'll be dealing with challenges and issues. And that can include some, you know, very serious economic, political, social issues. Education is the key to me for helping individuals and communities have greater opportunity to deal with the issues that affect them.
Harvey McHugh is an Anishinaabe educator and curriculum developer from the Georgina Island First Nation. You're listening to Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, U.S. Public Radio, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Today, it's all about the kids, bringing classrooms to the next level.
Why don't you start? We're going to go around.
I'm feeling 9 out of 10.
Nice. What about you, Kaden?
I'm also 9 out of 10.
And then what about you, Jackson?
I'm feeling like a 47 out of 50.
Brittany Townrow's grade 6 class at West Point Gray Academy in Vancouver is checking in after enjoying some time outside.
8.5, 9 out of 10 as well. Chase, what about you, Ed?
7.
Oh.
I like the number 7.
Nice, that's a good number.
These students are part of a changing landscape in education, incorporating new ways of learning through Indigenous knowledge and perspectives.
10.
Nice, right?
Yeah.
Seven. Brittany is from the Heltsik Nation, and a welcome addition to her classroom are curriculum bundles, which help her share knowledge from her own community. She helped create the bundles as a student in the Indigenous Teacher Education Program, or NITEP, at the University of British Columbia. The bundles range from Indigenous mathematical skills to Haida supernatural beings. They're designed to help teachers from all backgrounds incorporate Indigenous knowledge into their curriculums. Shannon Letty is the Métis professor behind that class project, and now she's witnessing the assignment play out in real life. Shannon, Brittany, welcome to Unreserved.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, Brittany, let's start with you. Why do you ask students to rate how they're feeling when they're outside?
Absolutely. So to give you some context, it is our branch weaving and weaving together workshop. And we spend a lot of our time outside. And I was noticing our kids' moods changing as we spent time outdoors. And so I wanted them to notice those changes as well. And so I always start off my class with a check-in, regardless of I'm teaching grade 6, JK, grade 7. I always ask them, how are you feeling? You can either give me thumbs up, we can go into more detail. But typically the morning I'll start off with getting them to do sort of a fun activity with checking in. And then I said, okay, we're going to spend some time outside and your exit ticket is going to be reflecting on how you're feeling now that you've spent some time weaving, sitting outside and just being together on the land.
And what are those changes? What do you see as you know, they start to learn outdoors as opposed to indoors?
I think one of the big things when I check in on the morning with them is that they have so much on their plate and they're thinking about so many different things, whether that's soccer or a French exam or some math. They have all these things that they come into the classroom thinking about. And after we spend some time outside, I'm noticing as they're reflecting, they don't have those worries in their head as we're talking. We make space to talk about our worries and our challenges. And by bringing those forward, we're able to kind of notice, hey, you're not alone. I feel those ways too. I get anxious. I get nervous. And I think just modeling those two with our students is important. And I think I have a daughter who's in grade 3. And I think what I'm noticing is she sees this finished product, but she doesn't see all the times we've fallen and gotten back up and gotten stronger and learned from that as well. So I really try to model with my students that I make mistakes, and it's how we handle those mistakes and reflect is how we grow. I think what I'm noticing with my daughter is we are stuck in this problem and we don't see the solution. And so we just keep talking about this problem, math test, and it's like, okay, I understand we have that problem. How are we going to get to that solution? Like, there's solutions, and we just need to clear our head, maybe take a space, go outside, and then come back to that problem.
Shannon, let's shift to you. What is a curriculum bundle?
First, can I just say that it fills my heart to hear Brittany speak about her classes and the work she's doing in that way. Thank you, Brittany, for everything that you do out there in the schools. So a curriculum bundle is an idea that I came up with to sort of create content for our Decolonizing Teaching, Indigenizing Learning website at UBC. And it was an opportunity for students in their third year of the NITEP program, our Indigenous Teacher Education program, to highlight the knowledges that they bring to their studies from their own communities, from their own nations, from the places that they are in the province. And the idea is that because there are so many teachers that come through the Bachelor of Education program who are non-Indigenous, but who have the requirement to include Indigenous content in their work, they don't necessarily know where to start. So giving these third-year NITEP students the opportunity to share from their own cultures, to share with permission from whoever their teachers are, to think about how might non-Indigenous educators take up this work in good and meaningful ways that are not appropriative, that are not, just tokenistic, but actually meaningful classroom experiences. That's what we wanted to create with the curriculum bundles. And we also wanted to move away from education being sort of metropolitan centric. It's easy living and working in Vancouver to forget that the province is huge and that our students actually come from across Canada. So it makes us less focused on where we are doing our learning, where the learning is situated, and where the teaching is actually going to occur in the province.
Can you give me some examples of maybe some of the curriculum bundles that they've, developed?
Absolutely. Well, Brittany can speak to the curriculum bundle that she developed about cedar weaving. We also have one by Musqueam artist and teacher and a colleague of Brittany's, Diamond Point, about the traditional pigments that are used in Musqueam art. There are curriculum bundles about water, the importance of water, about salmon. There are curriculum bundles about the National Association of Native Women. There are just a variety of topics, children's literature, really just about anything and everything you could think of is available. And the wonderful thing about that is that there are cross-curricular connections for each of these bundles. So they're not just in language arts or, science. They're interconnected.
Right. And so what makes them different from, what you would consider a regular education curriculum?
The reformed British Columbia curriculum has the requirement for Indigenous content inclusion in all subject areas at all grade levels, but often those curricular requirements are simply suggestions that don't actually give teachers an idea of where they should go to find content to meet that mandate. Mm. So these curriculum bundles are designed to fill in some of those gaps that the revised curriculum has left open.
Okay. You mentioned that Brittany had created a bundle. Tell me about the Cedar Tree curriculum bundle that you made, Brittany.
Absolutely. So the Cedar Tree weaving curriculum bundle really helped me to understand how to carry Indigenous knowledge in the classroom through curriculum. And so if I can give you a little bit of insight at into my development of this curriculum and how it really gave me a paradigm shift in the way in which I see curriculum. So for, as Shannon was mentioning, that we're working with community. And so I reached out to HealthSick and shared that I'm creating this curriculum and getting guidance from community. And as I was creating it, they mentioned, you have permission to teach this. Non-Indigenous teachers do not. And in my head, I realized I'm creating a UBC curriculum for non-Indigenous and Indigenous teachers. So that really shifted the way I saw curriculum and my role in bringing forward curriculum. So from that moment has shifted the way that I bring curriculum into the classroom through a non-Indigenous lens. And I think being an urban Indigenous person, I understand that I'm not from this community. And my community is, I'm removed from it. And so thinking about how do I honor the communities that I'm on, but also honoring the teachings from my community as well. And so how do I present this for non-Indigenous teachers to carry the work forward as well? So that concept of allyship is what really grew from that moment as well. I feel this can impact on such a larger scale, Indigenous or non-Indigenous kids, being able to be comfortable who they are and seeing culture carried with such love and kindness has been something that I've really focused on. And it's less about what we're teaching, but how we're teaching it as well.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned permissions and who is allowed to teach this and who is not allowed to teach it. How were you able to navigate those concerns?
Absolutely. Then it really made me unpack protocol and ethics and respectful, reciprocal relations. And I think in my role as the Indigenous Ed Coordinator, I'm supporting non-Indigenous teachers teaching Indigenous knowledge. And so that frame and having that understanding that I'm a guest on this territory and seeing it through that lens, I think has really helped me support non-Indigenous teachers bringing this work forward through allyship. So this was sort of the pivotal moment that that provided this trajectory of where I am. And through Shannon's course and through developing this really helped me understand it from more of a fundamental approach.
Shannon, in terms of some of the things that Brittany has just told us about permissions and protocols and seeking these things and who cannot teach, how are you supporting educators in navigating these same questions and concerns?
That is such a good question. At the time that this assignment was conceived of for the NICHEP course, I was also the coordinator for the required Indigenous education course for the Bachelor of Education program at UBC. And one of the things that I spoke with the mostly non-Indigenous student teachers about was that Indigenous education is all about relationships. So that also translated itself into how to address that concern within helping NICHEP students to produce those curriculum bundles. So there was a section that they needed to fill out about protocols. And that was both meant to address ensuring that the NICHEP students did have those permissions from their communities to share the learning that they thought they might want to share. And then also ensuring that the in-service and pre-service non-Indigenous teachers would understand what protocols needed to be followed. So if they were in teaching in a community where offering tobacco and building relationships with knowledge keepers or elders was part of that local protocol, then that was important. I also always suggested that they started with their school district personnel and to build genuine relationships with people so that they weren't just, you know, hitting up someone for a one-off lesson and then never speaking to that person again and, you know, devaluing the relationship and devaluing the Indigenous educators' humanity. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of focus on how do we do this in a good way? What do respectful relationships look like? What does a reciprocal relationship look like? And what considerations do you need to take in when you're thinking about deploying these curriculum bundles within your own community and your own classroom? So protocol and respect were definitely a huge part of the equation, both on the NITEP end in creating the bundles and then in thinking about how we're going to ask non-Indigenous educators to take that work up.
Brittany, how have these bundles changed you as a teacher?
I think they have completely shifted and transformed the way I saw Indigenous knowledge being taught. I grew up thinking, being taught it through like an arts and crafts approach. There's so many different lenses that you can bring Indigenous knowledge into the classroom. And these curriculum bundles helped me see cross-curricular connections that now allow me to bring Indigenous knowledge into the classroom. For example, we're having natural yarn dyeing with chemistry and seeing how we can talk about the different properties of plants. I'm getting kids to think about paddles and different paddle shapes. And then this is from a grade four student, and I've taught them the shapes. And I said, the community that we're on is Coast Salish, and there are 66 communities within Coast Salish. And we can look at the different paddles and looking at my community as well, and talking about form line shapes, which are from my community, and getting the kids to see it just beyond arts and crafts. There's just so many things that really just opened up my eyes to seeing it. And this land-based learning, when I was giving consultations from my community, is they said land-based learning is a tool that non-Indigenous teachers can use to teach Indigenous education. So that really transformed the way I saw Indigenous knowledge being carried in the classroom through just a variety of means. And I think being able to work with all these different teachers and being able to try out all these different projects and seeing it grow from JK with the paddles, where they got to create their own little paddles, to grade fours doing paddles and talking about how pointy ones are whaler paddles and they needed to. So thinking about the tools that they'd use, contemporary, traditional. I think the teachers are so on board with bringing in cross-curricular connections and seeing it applied in their classroom. And the kids are just being, I tell them, like, we're approaching this with an open heart and an open mind. And this is how we're going to approach my class, but maybe all classes. And seeing how you can grow this pedagogical approach to teaching Indigenous ed through textiles, through cedar, through land base. It's what's your strength, what calls to you. I think then it feels more authentic for the teacher as well. And then the kids feel it too.
And I see Shannon like nodding her head very excitedly when listening to you talk about this thing. What difference would it have made for you to have these kinds of curriculums surrounding you as you grew up and being educated?
Well, I think I'm now seeing the curriculum through my daughter's lens and having her come home and sharing beautiful stories that she's learning about in the classroom. Right now, she's making a bentwood box, and just the joy of her building it, but also seeing all of her classmates creating one as well. I think then we see it from such a beautiful strength-based approach to knowledge. And I think the way that I'm seeing my daughter just and our students being confident in who they are. For example, I was telling one of the kids that I had a birthmark on my arm and I was embarrassed of it. And she's like, don't be embarrassed about it. That's what makes you you. Whereas growing up, it was like, you hide that. Like, you don't want to be different. But the kids, they're just like, they don't see flaws is what they're seeing. And I saw so many flaws in myself all the time. And I think I've been working through that a lot too. And trying not to see, I was thinking about it a lot of my story wasn't pretty. My mother's story wasn't pretty. And it's been challenging dealing with that narrative too of growing up just always never feeling good enough and always feeling like you're different and you have to hide who you are. And these curriculums allow the kids to see that you're beautiful in your space. And just loving ourselves, I think, really gives our kids the tools. I've been thinking of the role of the school and what does that mean and who are we creating? And I think this holistic approach to seeing the kid, the mind, body, and soul, is just giving our kids the tools to just really appreciate who they are and grow into such beautiful humans that love and appreciate each other, the land, the community. I think if that's what we're growing, our future is looking bright.
Shannon, Brittany, thank you so much for your time and your knowledge today.
Thank you so much for having us. Brittany just makes me proud every time she speaks. And I appreciate the opportunity to share our thinking and our work with you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you, Rosanna, and having us on here on Unreserved. And I'd like to say Gayasica, which is how we say thank you in our community. And thank you, Shannon, for all the work that you've done. And I just, every time I'm in the classroom, I have you on my shoulders, and I just like to carry this work forward. And it is all because of you. So thank you.
Oh, you're a darling.
Aw, I love a loving. Shannon Letty is Métis and an associate professor of art education at UBC. Brittany Townrow is Helsic. She is a teacher at West Point Grey Academy in Vancouver and UBC's Indigenous Education Coordinator. That's all our time on Radio Indigenous. This episode was produced by Kim Kasher, Rhiannon Johnson, Danielle Piper, Elena Hudgens-Lyle, Zoe Tennant, and Laura Bone-Steubing. Find more on our website at cbc.ca/unreserved. Listen on the CBC Listen app or your favorite pod places. I'm your favorite cousin, Rosanna Deerchild, coming at you from Winnipeg in Treaty 1 territory. Kanaskinamitinawa. Agusei.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.